Yeah, I actually have it at time right now, 12:20, when we're supposed to start. I am very, very lucky today. In this session, I stand between you and lunch. My next session, I stand between people and freedom. So I will make this relatively quick. First of all, thank you for attending. This is just my thanks page at the very, very start. So that way, if you want to go and, you know, figure out where I'm going to be putting the slides up and stuff like that, you can do it and not wait until the very, very end. That's my my Twitter feed up there as well. I don't know how much, the name of the title of this is "It's Not Your Daddy's Web Server." I'm not exactly sure how well people, how that translates. It's very, very much an American saying, and it usually has to do with something that has been around for a very, very long period of time and is seen or has a reputation of being old and stodgy. You see it a lot in like car commercials. This isn't your dad's Buick. You know, when you think of a Buick or an Oldsmobile or something like that, you know, it looks terrible. It's not what the cool, hip, young kids are using nowadays. So that's what, excuse me. So that is unfortunately the stigma that Apache HTTP is burdened with currently right now. For me, just a little bit about me. I've been working on the HTTP project since 95, and because of that, have had a lot of opportunity to do stuff in the open source space. So I'm really, really happy, you know, about that. But as I said before, there are some there's some FUD, some fear, uncertainty, and doubt, some misconceptions about Apache HTTP nowadays. Even though Apache is not just Apache web server, I still tend to use Apache when I mean, you know, Apache HTTPD. So if I do say that, please forgive that, that lapse. You know, one of the first things, of course, is the idea, you know, that Apache doesn't scale, that it's slow. Certainly that was the case. And if you want to, you can configure Apache to be slow. If you're using the old prefork scenario, which is how Apache was architected back in the 1.0, 1.3, where, you know, the major heavy lifting item was the forked process, then yeah, you know, it can be slow. The thing is that nowadays, that is not the optimal, best, or even preferred, you know, method or architecture of using. We still provide that mechanism if need be. But the idea that Apache doesn't grow or scale is really not the case anymore. I have got some benchmarks to show you about that. What's also interesting is that we heard for the longest period of time, pure event-based architectures were the cat's meow. I mean, wow, man, you know, the 10K thing was the holy grail of architecture out there. And then what we saw is that that didn't scale as much as we needed to in the real world. So you saw a lot of web server architectures who were all about events-based mechanism now moving to threaded workers, you know, and thread pools of events and things like that, which is something that Apache had been doing for a while. So it's kind of funny how things come around. Also, it's been told that one of the FUD putting around is that Apache is too generalized. That what you want is what you need is something very, very targeted for a specific use case scenario. And the problem is that if you want to, you can have Apache basically be the Swiss Army knife of web servers out there. You can do a lot of stuff with it. But because of its modular nature, and especially because of the dynamic modular capability that you can just, you know, write at runtime, figure out what capabilities you do and don't want inside there, it's up to you to determine how generalized or how specific you want in that environment. And generally, you know, looking at least in the biological world, being generalized is not necessarily seen as a bad thing, rather than, you know, more specialized predators, for example. So I would rather be the species and the species group on the left rather than the one on the right. Another thing is that the Apache configuration file is complex. And I do admit that. I mean, you know, it really has, the syntax of the configuration file has not changed from the very, very beginning. It is sort of like this hybrid XML, situation. We did have some things to fix that. But at that point, if that's what really is preventing you from using a web server or really any technology nowadays, I think you're kind of grasping at straws. You're looking for excuses. And certainly, if we were redesigning from scratch, then certainly we wouldn't be using the syntax we're using right now. We would be using JSON or YAML or whatever the thing is right now. But just about every editor out there, Eclipse, BBEdit, Sublime, Atom, has syntax highlighting for Apache configuration files. So there's really not that much to worry about inside there. And then the whole idea about Apache just being too old. Yeah, Linux is just as old, if not older, than Apache HDBD. So because of all these considerations, and because we knew that we wanted HDBD to continue on, we had some very specific design drivers for the web server. You'll notice that 2.4 actually came out in 2012, so actually 2.4 is kind of 6 years old nowadays. And it doesn't mean that it has not kept pace with the times since 2012. Maybe what we should have done is every couple of years bumped up, and so we'd be up to 2.8 or 2.10 or 3.15 or Red Apple version or something like that. But instead, what we've been doing is, because so many people are dependent upon the API, the programming interface between modules out there in 2.4, we've been adding new features to this version. So even though 2.4 is an old version number, there is a vast difference between the capability, functionality, performance between the HDBD 2.4 of 2012 and that of today. So some of the things that we knew that we needed to fix before we released 2.4, as well as the ones that we're doing right now, are these things right here. And I'll talk about each and every one in more detail as we go on. The first, of course, is that these are the things that we knew that we wanted to fold in. These were big, high-demand items for a lot of people out there and became growing up as new demand items. The first things that we wanted to address were the pain points of configuration, of when you do have to change and edit a configuration file to get Apache running the way you want it to run. One of the best things that we added inside there was this new module called Mod Macro that allows you basically to use like a templating system inside the configuration file. This is what we're talking about right here. For example, we're creating this macro that takes two arguments, and then instead of copying and pasting this junk many, many times as you would in your regular configuration file, you basically determine one boilerplate definition, and then you can use the macro. It doesn't change the internal structure of Apache. It doesn't make Apache itself run faster or anything like that. But from a system administration point of view, that's much easier to handle, especially if you need to change it and maintain it. Just say, for example, you needed to add another, directive in here or something like that. In the old ways, you'd have to do a grep throughout the entire script and change each and every one, whereas right here you change it once, so when you restart Apache, that change is propagated to all the templates. This is actually a module that was been around for 18 years. One of my very first ApacheCon presentations was about useful modules inside of HTTPD, and I specifically broke that out, but this is now a formal an official module inside of Apache. You're also able to define certain variable types inside of the configuration file. For example, when you start running Apache, you can define an environment variable called test, in which case, once it starts, then certain blocks inside of the configuration file are either turned on or turned off. If you're familiar with C and the C programming language, it's very simpler to define, in that area as well. We also have support for dynamic runtime configurations. This is actually happening internal. You don't need to use mod read write, for example, to change some of the runtime configurations, which is how you used to be able to have to do that, or heaven forbid, change the configuration file because it's daytime mode instead of nighttime mode and do a graceful restart. Now you can change these examples that will dynamically adjust the runtime configuration of Apache dependent on the the request that's coming in, how you want to generate the response, time of day, other environment variables as well. As I said before, this actually changes the runtime configuration. It provides a little bit more capability and flexibility to you as the system administrator out there. And finally, we determined that we needed to provide a little bit finer control over some of the existing commands and directives we had. For example, we've had for a long period of time the idea of timeouts, you know, how long to wait for another byte to come over the wire before we determine that the client is not going to send something else, or how long do we wait for, you know, sending something out before we get something back. They were very, very granular, you know, and very, very long-term. What we've been able to do now is add a new module that allows you to actually specify in pretty fine detail, how long to wait for the first byte, how long to wait for the first FINAC coming in over the wire, a lot more finer control. So that way you can actually fine tune, due to the latency that you're going to be looking at, what's an expected sort of traffic pattern behind here. And we're only going to go to a timeout on certain specific conditions. You might want a very, very short timeout on the socket side, but a relatively longer timeout when you actually start speaking the protocol, you know, waiting for the get or the push commands and something of that nature. So that's pretty nice out there. Another thing that we knew, because all of us who are developing this are also users, is sometimes when things go to hell in a handbasket, the first thing you want to look at is logging. You know, you want to look at your error log and find out what's going on. Again, that was all or nothing sort of situation. If you wanted very verbose logging, you would turn that on, but then you got a ton of logging, and it was impossible to figure out exactly the areas that were interesting to you, because you got verbose logging from every module, from every hook that was going inside of Apache HDD. We now have finer control inside of it, so you can turn it off, on and off, verbose logging just for specific modules and actually just for specific requests right here. So we're saying, for example, I don't care what the logging level is for the entire server itself, anything that has to do with SSL warnings, you know, we want to log at the info stage. And anything that comes in for this particular directory right here, I want all error logging to be at the debug level. So it provides a lot more flexibility and control for the sysadmin to figure out when things are going wrong. It's really nice if you're able to actually do that, change the configuration, do a graceful restart, and then, you know, figure out what's going on. I will save some time for Q&A at the end, but if you do have questions during the discussion, just raise your hands. I think we're a small enough group that that makes sense. And the way I always put it is I like having a dialogue instead of a monologue. So, yes?
By adding that additional logic, would it cause any performance?
The question was, by adding this additional logic, would it add any performance hit? The only performance hit you would have is obviously every time a request came in for that particular, you know, URL space, then, you know, it would be generating a lot of detail. But which is exactly what you want. But it would not affect anything else. So the daily, you know, so it wouldn't, no. Thank you. Okay, some of the things, some of this is just, fluff from previous versions outside there. It used to be in the old days that you had to tell HTTPD if you were having a name-based virtual host, you know, a server listing on the same host IP address and port, but just a different port number. So they used to have to say, hey, you know, I know that these IP addresses are copied here and there because they're name-based virtual hosts. You don't need to specify that anymore. If you add that inside there, you'll just get a warning at startup saying, hey, you know, that's deprecated from now on. You'll see that we have a general purpose expression parser that a lot of our additional modules and configuration parameters use nowadays, and I'll point them out as we come to each and every one. Some loadable LPM modules. Before, the NPM modules, in case people aren't aware, that's the actual architecture of how Apache grows and scales. The one that most people are familiar with is the prefork, where Apache would spin up a lot of processes, and those processes would wait for requests coming in. A request would come in, that process would handle the request, you know, send out the response, and then continue waiting on. Very, very process-driven. There's the worker, which uses processes and threads. Threads are much more lightweight. And we have the event NPM, which is an event-based asynchronous mechanism that basically waits for events to come over the pike and runs it. Very, very similar to what you see with Lighty and Nginx and stuff like that. Before 2.4, those NPM modules were actually hard-coded inside to Apache. So if you wanted to change from one method to another, you would actually have to take down the system, load in a new binary that statically linked in that NPM module, and run it back up again. That was the last remaining module that wasn't dynamically, enabled. You know, you couldn't just change the configuration file, say load module, event NPM, do a graceful restart and change. That's been fixed nowadays. Again, that's really, really nice if for some reason you need to change the architecture, and, while the system is up and running again, you have no downtime associated with it. It's a nice graceful restart, and you're not kicking the knees out from any requests that might be coming in inside there. One of the things that also is, I guess, everyone has different ideas on the best way to create access control lists. We didn't think that the previous way with allow, deny, allow, and the ordering of that and stuff like that was very, very logical. We saw way too many cases where, people were setting things up in a way that they were giving permission to something that they didn't want to give permission from because they didn't quite understand all the idiosyncrasies of how those things relate. So we came up with a different concept just using the require directive, which we think is a little bit more, logically based. We're saying that, we're requiring a group of admin. For this directory, we require all of these parameters for someone to have access to it. In this directory, all people are granted access. We think it makes a little bit more sense and less prone for error or confusion when people are setting it up. Because it is a big change, if you still have old configurations from 2.0 or 2.2, we do have a backwards compatibility module inside there, which basically takes that configuration and internally changes it into that format. Although we do recommend that you would, eventually change over, to its custom. Server-side languages have been, first were the cat's meow, were the fantastic things. You saw Mod Perl and Mod PHP and all this stuff that was going on inside. And then it was like, oh, no, that's passe. You don't ever put, languages and capability actually on the server itself. You actually farm it out. And then lo and behold, oops, that's cool stuff nowadays. We've had Mod Lua in there for quite a while. Lua is a really, really nice, fast language to not only do application-specific programming, but also for you to create custom Apache modules. And the reason why is because, as I said, it's very, very small, it's very fast, but it's really optimized for handling string-based oriented actions, parsing strings, changing strings, adding strings, scanning strings, large strings, small strings, and stuff like that, which is basically what we do in the, in the HTTP world, is that that's our language that we, propagate with. So we have this inside here. We use it a lot on the actual Apache web server website and on the ASF website as well. A lot of the cool functionality we have on some of the modules and on some of their pages actually use that. So again, if you want to start looking at some server-side capability, or you want to start creating your own Apache modules instead of having to code them in C, Lua is a really nice, easy-to-learn language. And finally, I'm going to go through some of the other cool modules and just point out some very, very small specifics of these. As I said before, all these slides are going to be up on SlideShare, so you'll be able to look at them at your leisure. ModSed is a nice module. We did have a module inside called ModSubstitute, which was basically a substitute and replaced functionality. As a string would come in, look for a .jpeg. Every time you saw a .jpeg in the string, .jpeg in the content, change that to a .gif or something like that. You would do that on the fly in the same way that you would do so in a big file. Substitute is quick, but it wasn't really a full sed implementation itself. Now, if you're more comfortable with, you know, GNU sed or something like that, then we have that full functionality inside there. For something quick and dirty, substitute is fine. Something more sophisticated, if you need to change content on the fly, mod sed is your go-to. Mod repote IP, I'll talk a little bit later on about Apache as a reverse proxy. But one of the things that being a reverse proxy does is that it hides that real client address from the back-end server. You know, the way a reverse proxy works is the client talks to the server then makes a request and passes that request to the back end. Well, from as far as that back end is concerned, the client IP is the IP address of the reverse proxy server, not the browser that made the actual request. We have a module inside there that actually allows us to propagate that real IP to the back end. Sometimes your application servers really, really need that. Also, HAProxy has what's called the proxy protocol support, which actually exposes that information in an HTTP request header. We actually have support for that now. So that's another way of getting that that information to a back end out there. Even though HTTP is stateless and we should really, really try to do that as much as possible, sometimes you need to maintain, you know, session state in a server type environment. Everyone has their own texts and unique ideas on how to do that. Mod session is just a way that we provide the framework to do that. Independent of what the backend is, by using mod session, you can maintain session state, you know, in a very, very easy, comprehensive way, no matter what the backends are. So you don't have to worry about recreating session if you're talking to these backend servers and doing it differently here. You can use one simple interface to do that. And sometimes forms are also something that everybody has their own different way of doing, and it would make sense maybe to have some of that, some of that actually done by the web server itself. To help sysadmins when they're having some trouble, and it's also sometimes good for developers as well, is that not only sometimes do you need more sophisticated verbose logging, you need to know what's going on in very, very detailed at a specific request handling hook time. Apache is generated by this idea of hooks, is that as a request comes in, I need to now map that to a file, and I need to find out user authentication, and I need to find authorization, where these different phases of operation are called hooks. And sometimes you just need to have much more verbose logging as far as what's going on inside there to try to figure out, for example, why someone who shouldn't have permission is now being, having permission to it. So you might want to say that for the hook authentication phase, I want to have a lot more detailed logging because I want to know why this authentication, this person who shouldn't be authenticated is being authenticated inside. Sometimes you also need to, rate limit information to clients. We have a module to do that. And this, a little grab bag of everything. Mod cache, we put a lot of time and effort into mod cache. It's much more compliant with the spec, provides a lot more capability inside there. We've improved the side project itself, which goes through and cleans the fluff that's left over by mod cache. If you're using a disk-based cache, that's what htclean does. And we've also added support that if you want the caching module to use Redis or memcached as your as your cache, as a key value store area for you, you can do that natively inside there. You don't, in addition have shared memory support and local disk, you can now do it to that. Particularly of note, Apache Geode, which is a relatively new top-level project, actually has a Redis backport API, so you can actually use Apache Geode as your backend caching module inside there. And finally, there is a new cool hip compression technology out there called Brotli, and we support that. Obviously, the advantage of using Compression is that you save on bandwidth. You know, if you can compress the data before it goes out over the wire, it's going to go over the wire quicker, and you're saving on bandwidth itself. And the amount of overhead associated with decompressing it is minimal. So it's a long-term save all the way around. As I said, Broadly was and is a new compression algorithm, and we have full support for that. So in addition to GZIP and others, you can also use Mod Broadly. We've also spent a lot of time on improving module and reverse proxy capability, because we see that in a lot of cases that's where Apache is really, really being used. So for us, we've added in support for a huge slew of protocols out there. For example, FastCGI, SCGI, USCGI for Ruby. We also support AJP as another protocol. These are all the different protocol schemes that Apache can be talking to on a back end. This is, FastCGI is common for PHP, for example. ModProxy AJP, which isn't up here, is the standard way of talking to Tomcat, on the back end. The idea being is that no matter what that back end that Apache needs to talk to, you can pretty much guarantee that we talk its native preferred protocol language to do that. And I'll talk about some of these in a little bit more detail later on. Oh, ModProxy HTML is actually a relatively different one. It's not really a protocol per se, but it's more of a pattern recognition mod substitute that is much more aware of the intricacies inside of HTML. So it's much more HTML aware, so it's much easier to say, inside of this HTML tag, replace this content with something else. You can do that with mod sed or mod substitute, but the regexes are pretty, pretty nasty and scary. ModProxy HTML just makes it easier. So if you're changing HTML content on the fly and you're not very comfortable with your regex guru skills, then ModProxy HTML might be a good way of doing that. It was the case back then, and certainly the case right now, that it's obvious that the cloud has been a game changer for a lot of years. A couple reasons why is because horizontal scalability is now pretty viable. Yeah, you could do that before, but it was very, very painful to have to spin up your own versions of Apache HTTPD. You had to bring up another server. You had to find another server off the shelf someplace. Those were the terrible, bad days. So horizontal scalability is actually pretty cool now. Hey, that we should take advantage of that as much as we can. Concurrency is no longer the only consideration, or maybe even the primary consideration before. The number of requests per second we can get on a specific box is kind of important, but if you can scale that out, horizontally scale that out, and balance that load out there, maybe it's not all that important, assuming that those instances aren't very expensive. Maybe that isn't the big thing. Maybe provides us the capability to actually worry about transaction time. The actual time it takes to handle a full request response time frame, reduce latency, increase that user experience by making sure that there is as little time as possible between that exchange. Of course, density still matters. I'm not saying that's not the case, but this provides us an opportunity to rethink our high availability and scaling concerns that we weren't able to think about just a few handful years ago. So again, the cloud has put a lot of design drivers on, I think, all web servers nowadays. Apache isn't unique in that. The other thing to think about is that it's a very, very dynamic place. Because horizontal scaling is easy, you've got to put up with an environment where you have back-end servers coming up and going down relatively quickly. How do you handle that? And the other thing is that Apache still is most probably one of the frequently used front-end reverse proxies out there. I know there was a Netscape report coming out a little bit, and Nginx is coming up. I have some thoughts about that. I won't go into at least right now, but it's still very, very heavily used out there. And again, if you're thinking about a reverse proxy, maybe this talk might made you think about looking at HTTPD. So these are some of the improvements we put on the back end. We support a whole bunch of other modules and protocols, as I mentioned before. We have additional load balancing mechanisms. These are the mechanisms which determine how load is shared between these backend servers. You can change the clustering and the number of balancers on the backend and those types without restarts. I'll show that a little bit later on. And just some other things as well. And I'll talk about most of these in more detail later on. Yes? What is the use case for Unix domain sockets? Sometimes you might have Apache and Tomcat running on the exact same physical box. Okay, instead of having Apache and Tomcat talk on localhost, you know, 127.0.0.1, which requires all the overhead of TCP/IP, have it talk over Unix domain sockets. Much more quick. So it's much quicker than that. Yeah. Yeah, we do. We do. Yeah, it's super fast. And it doesn't even have to be. You know, it can be, you know, PHP, FPM, for example, whatever that is. It's always going to be quicker to go over a UDS than a TCP socket. Something that I'm really, really excited about, because I put a lot of tears and sweat into this, is the idea of back-end dynamic health checks on the back-end servers. Apache would always enable you, first of all, before it would send a request to a back-end server, if the back-end server, you know, dropped or failed or went away or something like that, it would retry to somebody else. So it always had that kind of resilience to a point. There was also a capability of, right before you would send the request to the back-end, do a quick check. You know, hey, are you awake? Are you up and running? Oh, you are? Good. Take this. And there are, you know, use cases for that scenario. But it would also be nice if, in the background, these back-end servers were constantly being pinged, constantly being checked. Are you up and running? Such that Apache would have a pretty much instantaneous notice that, hey, I know this is previously being checked, it's up and running. Chances are very, very good I'm going to be sending it to something which is up and running. I don't have to worry about that. So that's where the dynamic health checks come into. And we have a couple different ways of determining if that back-end is actually up and running. First is just a quick TCP/IP ping. Just make sure the socket is up and running and there's some server running in the back. That's very, very quick, very, very easy, but it doesn't tell you that there's actually an application or a web server running in the background. It just says there's something answering. That might be all you want. That might be just sufficient for you to be able to, you know, give you enough heads up that you know what's going on. You can also actually do HTTP requests on the back end. You can do options, which is sort of like the equivalent of, you know, ACK, you know, on a socket out there, or a CPing, Sing Pong for Tomcat people. It basically just sends an options command on the back end, and the back end web server sends out, yep, I'm up and running. That tells you the socket is up and running, but also you have a web server up and running on the back end. That's, you know, very, very fast as well, and lets you know, have a little bit more confidence that the back end is, you know, where you want it to be. You can also get much more sophisticated by actually sending full requests out there to actually physically look at what the back end's doing. And this is an example of it. I've got, you know, these back end nodes right here. On the very, very first one, the way I'm doing a health check on it is I'm sending a GET request to this URL, status.php, and I'm checking for this expression called in maintenance. And if there's any place in the return body of that GET request that I see the string under maintenance, that's telling me it's, you know, take this guy offline. You know, it's up and running, but I'm not going to be sending any requests to it because they just told me by the web page on their status page that they're up and running, that they're under maintenance, don't send stuff to them. In this one right here, I'm just sending a head request and making sure that it returns, you know, something nice, you know, a 200 request, you know, 304 or something like that. And if that's okay, then I know it's up and running. And on this one right here, I'm just saying I'm doing a quick, you know, TCP check and making sure that, you know, it's up and running and answering after a certain period of time. I think that has a lot of flexibility, a lot of capability. It happens in parallel with the actual handling of the reverse proxies itself, so it doesn't take away performance from Apache itself running. It's a process on the side, which is pretty nice. Sometimes what happens is that, you know, especially if you're using Apache, it's sort of like a central router, conductor, train station for a bunch of, you know, small microservices. Basically, you're having a request comes in here, it goes there. Nothing fancy, it's just a one-to-one piping, you know, the old style operator of plugging in requests to a certain backend server. The traditional way of doing that would be, you know, anything that comes in for this request goes to this backend, that request for that backend. And if you have, like, you know, 6,000 APIs that you need to wire and plug, that's a painful thing to do inside of a configuration file. Instead, it's much nicer to just basically define those one-to-one mappings in a regular text file, which is then converted to a DB file that Apache just reads. And then the nice thing about that is once that actually gets changed in the DB file, Apache will natively figure out that connection. So if you need to add one or take one down or change the direction of that, you would change the, in the map file, you know, create a DB file out of it, and Apache would just scarf up that up instead of having to change the configuration file and do a graceful restart. Yes?
I'm curious about the use of DB files in general in HTTP. Is it purely for performance that you don't read the text file?
It's just purely for performance. It's purely... Basically, you know, the reason why is because it's a key value store lookup rather than having to do a, you know, read through the file and do a, you know, string comparison on what's going on.
Okay, so you guys are like using DB.
Yeah. I mean, and we support a whole bunch of, you know, the actual DB is something you can determine, you know, it can be DB4, GDBM, SDBM. You can also, if you want to, put that on a small cache, so it could be Redis or whatever. It's just using the nomenclature.
Okay,
sure, thank you. Also, because of the dynamic nature of everything, we realized that there needed to be a way of changing, you know, because the web itself is dynamic, we needed some sort of mechanism that allowed the sysadmin to change its view of what the back end is without having to change the configuration file and do a graceful restart. Even though you're not, you know, cutting any requests off, it's a very, very painful way of doing that. It doesn't scale in any particular way. And it also can't be automated. It can't be scripted. So what we came up with is this idea of an embedded admin. I'm going to show you the web interface to that, which is built inside of Apache and is very, very easy to figure in. This is it right here. I'm going to the balancer manager, and you see inside here I've got a cluster set right here with a bunch of back-end nodes. This one was disabled, and now it was enabled, I disabled it, and then immediately Apache took that change up. I'm now changing the balancing mechanism by requests because the traffic patterns were different. And again, instead of having to change the configuration file, I just did this totally. I need to bring up another node on the back end because we've got a lot more traffic. I'm adding a new worker on the back end. I'm clicking sure, and it immediately is up and available, but it's disabled initially. That enables you the time to be able to fine-tune it and stuff like that. But I want to just go and kick that in right in. And then right now, it's added to the pool, and it's going to start taking up traffic inside there. You might be concerned that all these things will then go away once you need to take Apache down. So I'm just showing you that right now, all those changes can be persisted. I went to the page when Apache was down, but now all the changes are still there. What happens is that all these changes are stored in shared memory, and when Apache goes down, it takes that shared memory data and puts that in a file. When Apache restarts again, it reads that file in, which is basically the delta between the configuration file and the running configuration, and applies those changes back onto it. So that way, you don't need to worry about taking it down and all these changes that you may have done either manually or scripted, because it's very, very easy to do this. Script-wise, will, you know, maintain itself. It's always good to know what's going on, and so, of course, what we also provide information to mod status that shows how everything's going on. The other thing that we really, really focused on, obviously, and I think it's the biggest misconception about Apache is that it's slow. So I have a couple slides that basically show that's simply not the case. Nick Rosenthal did a really, really nice comparison of Apache Nginx and HHVM PHP on the back end, and he showed that in general, Apache 2.4 with the event npm outperformed Nginx in this particular environment right here, which was pretty nicely surprising. Also, a couple years ago, Brian Call was, they were looking at, I think this had something to do with Apache traffic control, but they were looking at performance in doing back-end reverse proxying. And so they went through a whole bunch of benchmarks and things of that nature, compared things like Varnish, HTTPD, Squid, Nginx, and the Apache traffic server. And the things to take away is that there were no clear winner. Depending on what you wanted, you would pick the right one. But in general, HTTPD had the lowest latency, performance, which was, at least in that case, fine, and acceptable CPU usage inside there. So again, thinking about the idea that nowadays what you can do is actually fine-tune a web experience for lowest latency, it's pretty nice being able to have that. For raw performance, again, looking at the event npm, it's no longer experimental. In the old days it was. It's non-blocking, asynchronous. It's got a small footprint, so these numbers are even better than they were. Of course, I'm assuming everyone's numbers are better than they were nowadays, but so I actually did spend some time doing a one-to-one comparison between Apache and Nginx because, hey, it's what everybody talks about. It's a common thing. These are some parameters inside there. The big thing to take away is you'll notice I use a really, really small memory footprint because that has historically been the bugaboo for Apache. If it runs up against, a memory limit, then it needs to start swapping, and that just absolutely destroys performance outside there. These were the setups. Again, the slides are going to be available so you can take a look at, but you'll notice that in general, I try to do things as much as possible to maintain an even and valid environment. These were the things I used, and these are the parameters. These are some of the conditions of the benchmarks inside there. And these are some of the benchmarks I'm looking at. Now, this right here is basically looking at this time scale is time, so lower is better. This is increasing concurrency. And so what we're looking at in this phase is basically the time takes to do a request response time frame. The time it takes to open a socket, read, write, close the socket, the whole user experience. And you can see that with the event npm and Nginx, performance is pretty much on the same. Some aspects are the same. Because of the event nature, it's going to be somewhat sporadic. That's just part and parcel of something which is event-based and asynchronous. Things are ready when things are ready. But the main takeaway is that there's really not that much difference out there. If you want to go and really, really optimize for a known nice steady state environment, then even though the pre-fork is very, very old, it's very, very expensive to use because you're using processes instead of threads. The advantage of doing that is you have very known, expected, predictable time frames associated with that. That might be what's important to you in your environment. If it is, then maybe that might be something to look at. In this particular comparison right here, I'm just looking at the total request response time frame. Again, time increasing concurrency with pre-fork worker npm and Nginx. Again, the main takeaway is that there isn't something way, way up here that says Nginx, or way, way down here says Nginx, and Apache is like, really, really nasty. This is just using a different one. Again, time. This right here shows both the average, min, max of standard deviations between here. I guess the biggest takeaway is that if you're looking at variability in some of these parameters, again, at least in this situation, Nginx showed the most variability, which was proven out in that other scenario where they showed, really, really weird latencies as well. Because I am me, and obviously I have a vested self-interest, there are some other independent benchmarks outside there. There are URLs inside here as well, but basically it shows that in this situation, again, Apache was very, very performant. You know, the main takeaway is that historically the web server, well, traditionally the web store server is not going to be the slow link in the chain. There's going to be other things doing inside there. Benchmarks do get stale very, very fast. You do have to make a choice, but please, do the testing yourself and don't rely on benchmarks. Two more slides. Basically, we've also added full HTTP2 support, fully supplying the being compliant to the spec. There was actually a report out, I wish I had the URL for it, that showed compliance to HTTP2 spec with all the web servers that were out there and supporting it. And Apache was the only one that got like above 95 or 98%. A lot of that is due to the support library that we use to actually do some of the framing and the HPACing and stuff like that. But it's really, really nice to know that. And we support both the normal traditional compressed one, encrypted one, but also we do it in clear text. You can also talk on the back end HTTP2. So it's a nice way of testing out your environment by having a reverse proxy in here that still talks HTTP1 and you're talking HTTP2 to the back ends to see how performant it is, how much performance improvement you get. And finally, we have got some increased security. We have support for ACME, which is basically the protocol that implements the Let's Encrypt SSL support. That's with mod MD, which is pretty cool. So it's very, very easy to now basically no excuse not to TLS encrypt your website. And we'll have full support for TLS 1.3, most probably in the next release. But of course, it will need and the next version of OpenSSL. That is it for me. I think we're pretty much good. We maybe have 3 minutes for questions. Again, slides will be up on SlideShare. If you have any questions or anything like that, please don't hesitate to ping me or send me an email. If you're interested, lurk on the dev@htpd website and give it a try. Yes? I'm not sure. The question was, if I have OpenSSL 1.1.1, included in there, is there something that I can do to the current version of Apache to test it? And I don't think trunk. You can, of course, the development version. I don't think any of that stuff has been backported to 2.4 yet. So.
Okay, so it does require explicit support.
It does. It does. Yeah. Any other questions? Okay, thank you everyone for attending. Enjoy a great lunch, and you can ask as I let everyone go. Okay.
I got two more. So mod security has been like a really popular external tool. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about the licensing or anything like that. Have you guys ever talked to them about maybe merging that into the?
Yeah, we've never talked to the mod security people about actually having that folded into and becoming an official Apache module. So no, we haven't. It's worth an email or a phone call to find out what's going on. As you said, it's a lot of people use it, a lot of people depend on it. It's always good to have your friends tight. So yeah.
Last thing was, has the landscape for
HTTP
changed anything? Really changed with the introduction of Apache Traffic Server and Traffic Control?
Apache Traffic Server itself is an incredibly performant reverse proxy server. It's really, really fine-tuned as a cache. And so most places who are using Apache Traffic Server are using it as a very, very high-performant cache more than anything else. It's a big, wide world. There is no one-stop solution for everything. There are specific use case scenarios where ATS would go through swimmingly, and HTPD would be panting on the floor. There are reverse cases as well. So it doesn't really change the landscape. The landscape itself has changed enough that there is room for generalized, specific, and all different variations out there.
I guess what I meant is that HTTPD seems to be sort of a general purpose web server. And you mentioned a lot about your upgrades in capabilities for reverse proxying.
Mm-hmm. True. I mean, the idea is that there are a couple ways of looking at it. You know, and if people want to go, that's fine. That's it's cool. If all you're looking for is like a brain simple reverse proxy, you know, then yeah, you can set Apache up to do that. And performantly, it would be a viable alternative. Chances are also very, very good is that you're going to need something with a little bit more intelligence, something that would handle cases, maybe something that helps, you know, determine specific routings or changing or things of that nature. Every once in a while, what will happen is that what you'll think is a simple architecture becomes very, very difficult, and you need some capability and functionality, maybe at the reverse slot proxy layer, that you didn't anticipate you needed. It's nice having something that if you need to add that functionality in, you can load that module inside. If you don't need it, don't run it. You don't have to worry about it. There's no heavyweight, you know, approach to it. But if you need for some reason to say, ooh, you know, we just changed something on the back end, or we just changed, you know, our website, and now we need to map, you know, URLs inside the return out of the, you know, content. You know, sometimes what will happen is that the application server would generate content that has URLs to an old space. It's very, very difficult to change the application server to change those URLs. It's better to do that at the reverse proxy side. Can't do that with some of the reverse proxies. You can do it with Apache. So,
thank you.
Thank you.